I'm joined by Dr. Nicoletta Asciuto to talk about her work on literary modernism. When I was doing a bit of a broader discussion on modernism with Brian Radley, we very briefly mentioned modernism in relation to new technologies. And so we did talk more a lot about science, but you're currently working on a book that's on lighting technologies and the poetic imagination from 1875 to 1925. So can you tell me a bit more about this?
So I guess I'm interested in seeing how people understood technology and how they reacted to new technology in this specific period of transition, which is the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th. So I'm really interested in this turn of the 20th century and what happens. I think it has quite a lot of similarities with what we're seeing today somehow. So I guess I'm interested in people and how they react, but also especially in writers and how they represent common imagination and the imaginary. So I think that comes more prominently in poetry. But obviously, poetry, as you know, is also more difficult to pin down and decide how much of reality is actually talking about. So
modernism has a lot to do with these transitions, isn't it, as we're coming up to the end of the century. And there's a lot of change in sort of ideas. When we talked a lot about scientific ideas, so the idea of the atom is porous, that, you know, things aren't as necessarily as physical as we thought they were. But also, it mentions in the thesis that you're talking about a lot about the transition from gaslight to electric. So how have you touched on this in relation to poetry?
So I think, my thesis was on light imagery already, so I was very finely attuned to this kind of imagery in poetry. I think it's interesting to see how in Victorian poetry, decadent poetry as well, so towards the end of the 19th century, there is a sense that gaslight is very much present in novels and poem, and it kind of gives the sense of a warm environment, nice, cheery, and then suddenly when we reach the 20th century, there is a shift and lights become more ghastly or terrifying or cold, and I always wonder about that specific moment. So how is that, how is that actually happening, how is that taking place? And so I started researching more into history of technology and when that exact transition happened. So then when the first experiments with incandescence, for example, happened in America with Thomas Edison. And it seems that there is quite a lot of overlapping. So the two technologies overlapped for a number of years, and there was a lot of resistance to electric lighting, strangely, and then from our perspective, why would you be resistant to something so useful?
So was there a reaction to that then? Because we talk a lot, I think, especially in terms of literature, about modernism being anti-modern. So did you find that in the poetry, that there was a reaction against this electric light, or was it a bit different?
In modernism in particular, so in modernist poetry, I find maybe it's not an open resistance, so there is no pamphlet against the electric light written by T.S. Eliot or James Joyce, but what is there is that there is a sense that gaslight is still very prominent, and so despite modernism being a reaction against whatever came before, I think it's actually quite the opposite. So it very much embeds whatever was happening before. And in fact, it looks back to the past quite substantially, I think.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about the same kind of lighting in novels as well? I mean, you know that you've focused a lot on T.S. Eliot's poetry specifically, but I'm writing my essay onto The Lighthouse at the moment, so it got me thinking about the electric light that's coming in from The Lighthouse and kind of the way that they seem to aspire to get to that kind of illumination. Have you looked at any novels like that?
I haven't looked at Virginia Woolf specifically, although I have read that novel, and I do find it particularly telling. But yes, there definitely is. And I think it's interesting to see how Into the Lighthouse, especially the indoor lamps, that tend to be gaslit or oil lamps. And so there is a sense that that's somehow the past,
the
family life, and that happens by gas light, by the fire, rather than by electric light. Yet the lighthouse attracts, right? So that's what they're sort of going towards.
Okay. And so you have been focusing on T.S. Eliot. Are there any sort of favourite parts that you want to bring up to sort of talk about this?
I suppose one good poem to talk about would be The Wasteland, in a sense that I spent most of my PhD trying to figure out why the sky was violet throughout the wasteland, and if it was anything to do with pollution or electric lighting or even old gas lighting looking slightly sort of purplish. Mm. So I think I finally realize it's probably more of a metaphorical color rather than scientifically provable experiment.
Okay. We've already mentioned that there's quite a lot of sort of an anti-technological vibe in a lot of poetry and literature more generally. But do you think there was a recognition of the new possibilities that this technology provided, perhaps in some of the later works? What springs to my mind, mm-hmm. it might be pushing on the outside of modernism just, but as Samuel Beckett in Crap's Last Tapes, you've got like the recorder there. Is there anything similar that's jumped out?
I think the closer we get to the interwar period and World War II, and so I think the more people are used to technology. So I think one example is the telephone. So I guess it kind of links it to back in the way. But so by looking at some magazines from the 1930s, there were still advertisements showing how to use the telephone and why you will want to use the telephone, which again seems particularly strange for us today. But then, so there was, as late as the interwar period, there was a sense that still people were wrestling with getting used to using technologies. Mm-hmm. So I think this happened so from around World War II and after, I think there is a sense that sort of later modernism that technology is still present, but it's more part of the everyday, so mm-hmm. it's more sort of accepted.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've reached that point today, haven't we? Because you just changed the new iPhone by every week.
Well, so I think, so definitely in the later, so if you think of W.H. Auden, or so there is a sense that it's more, so it's kind of there, and it's part of reality. What I'm interested in is exactly the period before, when it's still a bit magical.
I think going back to the transition as well, is obviously, if we talk about transport technology, so trains, in the middle of the Victorian period, even just the idea of a train going past really quickly gives that sense of the fast pace of transition.
Exactly.
And I think it's used quite a lot as a symbol in poetry and in just fiction more generally to sort of represent that idea.
Totally, and I guess it just makes, it also helps the narrative in a way, because some novels wouldn't have been possible without using trains as part of the sort of narrative device, so
yeah, definitely,
because it wouldn't be possible to go as quickly. The car, I think, is even more linked to a specific status. So I think you have to bear in mind with all of these, they were obviously initially acquired by the upper classes, and so and so the car, especially in poetry, symbolizes wealth, but also a lot of poets are attracted to it because of its speed and because it's individual. So you finally have your own little space, as opposed to trains or trams where you share that space. What I particularly like is the futurism in this respect, because it has quite a lot of poems and paintings about velocity, speed, the car. The car becomes almost a metaphor for speed for the modern age. So I think that's it's quite fascinating.
But again, there's still quite a lot of reaction against cars. I think I remember I was in a museum somewhere and it showed a picture of the first ever car, and there was a quotation underneath that said, "There is no way that this is ever going to replace the horse and carriage."
Yeah, that's true. I suppose one major example of that would be Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby, in a way, because the car becomes the killer, right? And he himself wasn't entirely pro cars, it seems. So I guess that's more popular culture, but it shows, yeah.
Mm. Okay, and then this is going away from technology, but also I was researching you on the English website and I found out that you're quite a linguist.
Yes.
So you speak 7 languages?
I do, yes.
What languages do you speak?
So my first language is obviously Italian, and then I speak English, German, Spanish. I know a little bit of Japanese, and I did Latin and Greek for many years.
I was thinking about The Wasteland, because obviously you focus a lot on T.S. Eliot, and I remember, it's been a little while since I've done it, but there's quite a lot of use of foreign languages within the poem.
Definitely.
And I wondered if you touched on this at all, like the relevance to modernism in the sense of the unfamiliar, perhaps?
Yeah, it's... Yes, so I think actually knowing a lot of languages was a great help, because I do think that, for example, in Finnegan's Wake, or even in The Wasteland, I think it somehow helps not feeling that foreign if you know what those words mean, I think.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So if you're reading the text and most of the words still resonate with you, because maybe it's French or it's Latin, but even so, there's still an element of trying to find out where Eliot found them, or where Joyce invented some Norwegian words it's something that I'm definitely interested in, and multilingualism and using all these different languages. And also Eliot was very, very good at French. His French was at a definitely high level, but his other languages were a bit, I mean, even the way he pronounces certain things in the recordings on The Wasteland, I went, so I guess, I think my sense is that the use of different languages is really there to give that sense of unfamiliar to the reader, but also to maybe make the reader realize that there is a whole new world there, that they're welcome to go and read more or find out more, or so.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Thank you very much for talking to
me. That's okay. My pleasure.